Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
Oh, what an exciting story we have for you this evening. And it also links in beautifully to another conversation we had recently on the business of. If you want to catch up on that conversation, do make sure you log on online, kaya959.co.za, or visit our YouTube page and you can follow up on a conversation I had on the business of luxury with Michael Zahariv, the CEO and co-founder of Luxity. But I say this because our next conversation is also about luxury, but this time, timepieces, literally. On Friday last week, Rolex had announced that they will be closing down its affiliate office in Sandton after 76 years in the country for various reasons. But essentially, the statement they issued essentially said that it's no longer conducive to have an office in this market and the region is no longer attractive. So this brings up a lot of questions. What does the luxury market look like in terms of watches in South Africa? What happens if you own one of these watches and are considering selling it in the pre-owned space or still using it? There's a lot we're going to unpack with Peter Magloop, South Africa's leading supplier of new and pre-owned luxury watches. Peter, such a pleasure to speak to you,
sir. Yeah. Nice to be here, Google.
You must have a very exciting job. Oh my goodness, Peter. Maybe let's start there. How did you actually get into being a supplier of watches and the broad approach that you have in experience?
It really started when I was a little boy. When I was a little boy and my mother used to take me to Johannesburg City, and we had to stop and look in all the watch shops. It was a fascination. I came from a jewelry family background, but I'd had a fascination with watches from a little boy, and I was a jeweler by trade, but finally I found a way back into the wristwatch business, which is what I wanted to do. And I've traded in the last 35 years, and it's been a fantastic journey. It's been a fantastic business. It's been a fantastic way to travel the world. It's been really, I've been involved for, as I say, 35 years, and I know it and I love it and I do it well.
Oh, you certainly do. I'm looking at your website and I see that you've certainly journeyed to many parts of the world, and you actually have a few images of Rolex watches on your website. Are you surprised at all by the closure and the exit of Rolex from South Africa?
Surprised slightly, but there's really nothing material about it. Just understanding where Rolex is at the moment. There used to be 25 or 30 different shops that they had to supply watches to. So they sent a big parcel to South Africa and then divided it up to these 25, 30 different shops. And there was a lot of work that was, remember, there was postage and telegrams and today with communication, what it is, they've cut down radically on the amount of shops they have. They'd rather have 6 big shops than 30 small shops. And that's where they're at today. I think they're at 7 or 8 stores that they're dealing with. So they don't, there's nothing really material about this decision of theirs. It's just easier with our communication, what it is, to run the 6 or 7 stores from Switzerland. Mm. In the old days, there were 25 stores. They had to run it from South Africa.
Sure.
Now it's, with communication, what it is, they just simply send out to the couple of stores that are here. And South Africa's not any more or less an unimportant market to what it used to. No, it's a small market compared with the USA or with China or with Hong Kong. But, you know, they've been supplying South Africa, as you say, for the last 76 years and longer. And that will continue. It's just the means of communication is different today. So they don't need to have a head office here. They can simply run it out of Geneva. Yeah. We'll still be receiving the same supply of watches to, as I say, the 6 or 7 or 8 Rolex stores that there still are today. So
I'm glad you mentioned that, in case any of our listeners actually might be Rolex owners and might be in a panic about how they'll be attended. But as you say, the service will still be provided, the communication is easier, and the partners are still in South Africa. Speaking of being a partner,
very much so.
I'm assuming that you're one of them. And you've
no.
Oh, you're not?
No, I'm definitely not. they do support me. They do send people. But my business is watches from Rolex watches that started in 1920 all the way up to brand new watches. I'll buy and sell and trade in in new, in almost new, in old, in vintage, in antique watches.
Wow.
Literally watches from 1920 till 2024, and I trade in them all. And it's so they don't supply me.
Mm-hmm.
But interesting, they talk very kindly of me, I suppose, because I'm doing it well and I have the right reputation.
As they
should. My point exactly, as they should.
As they should.
So,
and what I'm intrigued by obviously the various pillars. Oh, sorry, go ahead, Peter.
And another thing that is important. So the supply chain is coming straight out of Switzerland. They are still keeping their entire Rolex workshop here, which is important. So if you ever have a problem with your Rolex watch, you can still take it in. That's not sent back to Switzerland. They'll still have that same office in Santon, and your repairs will be done locally. So by no means are they sort of bailing out of South Africa. They're just changing the structure of supply.
100%.
Which made business sense to them.
Makes sense. Cutting costs, manage efficiencies, and adequate
exactly.
processes. Makes sense to any entrepreneur. What I'm intrigued by when it comes to your work, and as you've mentioned, you have different pillars where you sell new, almost new, vintage, and pre-owned luxury watches. I'm not even sure if we should be calling them watches or timepieces. Which one is it?
Same.
I'm glad. Thanks for that, Peter. You must have seen phenomenal trends in South Africa in the last few years, right? And maybe even the last few decades that you've been in the market. But I mean, particularly intrigued by the pre-owned luxury watch space. Are we finding that you have more access to stock? Because at some point during COVID, perhaps consumers needed to bring up cash flow and would sell their watches. Or are we seeing a different dynamic that there's a growing middle class that's aspirational now and actually looking to acquire these pre-owned watches?
Well, it's about, you know, these watches are such great quality that they've been producing for just over 100 years now, but the quality is so great that the watches will last 5 years and 10 years and 15 years. Rolex plans the watches to last 50 years, but they go on to 60 and 70 years, such as the quality of them. I bought a watch today from 1963, and I gave it a shake, and it carried on working. And the watch is now 55 years old, and yes, it needs to be restored, and a new dial, and a new bracelet. We get it back to as new condition, but, you know, a 50-year-old watch just keeps on going, so there's a fortune of watches. People are still buying new ones, but all the second-hand ones land up in the market. Mm-hmm. And because they're such good quality, they're easy to service, they're easy to maintain, and they hold a value. Mm-hmm. So, you know, sometimes the watch is traded, has gone to 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 different owners in its life, and it just keeps on going. So it speaks well about the great quality of this product. It's really built with a 50 and 60 year longevity, which there's not many products in the world that can do this. And they kind of get, as they get older, so they get better, like a good wine or, so this is the business. And there's also collectors of these old ones. We've seen interesting markets. 2008, the prices went sky high. There was way too much money in the world and people just started buying up Rolex and pushing the prices higher and higher. And that settled down in 2009, 2010, and then interesting, over the last 3 or 4 years, prices have once again gone crazy. Prices, there was a huge bubble that and you couldn't get hold of Rolex watches for love or money, and prices went ridiculously high, and the shops had no stock, all the only dealers like myself we had stock, and prices just went higher and higher. That has subsided now. Things are getting back to normal. But 2 years ago, there was this huge spike in Rolex prices where there were some Rolex watches that were trading at 2 or 3 times its new price. The watch was new, 10,000, but if you wanted to buy one, a second-hand one was got new, 20,000.
Mm.
So it was just this madness, but that's kind of largely gone away. That's largely settled down. And for the next 2 years, I think it'll be more normal. As I say, 2 years ago, things were so high that you had to be very rich or very silly to be buying at those prices. It's now come down to a normal to a normal, area where it's probably a good time to be buying again.
Oh, really?
It's almost time to be buying again.
Tell me more, Peter. This is where you're getting us excited, because not only do we want to understand, you know, the typical styles or types of watches that get a lot of attention from consumers, but also the average price range. Because as you've said, it does go up quite high. And again, I'm just looking at random prices that I'm finding online. And depending on the make, the style, the class, anything between what, 300,000 to half a million?
No.
Not accurate? Listen,
we only deal in the top end of collectible watches, but we probably started 35,000 and 40,000 and 45,000 rands.
Oh,
is where it begins, and then you'll buy a really, very plain old Rolex or a very nice Amelia or a good Breitling or Cartier. So you know it starts there, and then. And then there is no top end. There are little boys that will buy toys that run into millions and millions. Unfortunately, we don't have too many of those. But worldwide, there's been watches that have sold for $5 and $10 million, not rands, but dollars. You know, so there's no extent to what little boys will go to for their toys. It was a very famous watch that sold a few years ago that belonged to Paul Newman, the actor.
Really?
And it was just a very, very, very famous watch. And it finally sold for $17 million, which, you know, in terms of rands, it's hundreds of millions of rands. That's ridiculous.
That's almost the same way I value as a listed JSC company, one of the smaller ones. Geesh, easily into the hundreds of millions.
And this was his watch, which his wife had given him and had engraved, and nobody's really sure where it went to, but we suspect that Rolex bought it back because it'll be a great piece for their museum, which they'll open one day.
Mm.
And the amount of advertising marketing they got out of it was spectacular.
Mm.
But as I said, the lovely thing is. It's not only for millionaires. We've got little boys from the age of 20 to little boys of the age of 80, and everybody comes. You can buy and you can trade them in and improve, and over time they've gone up tremendously in value. So it's not money wasted, money well spent, and money enjoyed. Oh. And as you say, it's all about having. Buying things that you love and having fun while you're wearing them.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's kind of what it's all about. Yeah.
I find this so intriguing. This might be an unfair question, Peter, but one that really, I guess, intrigues me and does speak to our audience. If you are seeing a new crop of South Africans buying, and, you know, typically we use the fancy term and diplomatic term that it's the aspirational market that is now buying up, but essentially, are you seeing more black South Africans or people of color that are actually stepping into luxury watches?
Have been for years now. There's nothing new. And it's aspirational, but it's a fascination. And I keep on referring to little boys. I'm talking about little boys up until the age of 60 and 70. It's a little boys thing. And little boys love their toys. And it's not about color. It's not about little boys. Listen,
and when you say little boys, do you see more men than women buying luxury watches?
Yes, it's 85 or 90% men.
Sure,
10% women. It's a real boy thing, like golf clubs and sports cars. And, you know, it's a boys for toys, It's interesting is, you know, today a lot of people are wearing smart watches, and I really thought that the watch business was going to end with these smart watches. And quite to the opposite, I'm seeing youngsters coming in today who they just don't want to wear the Apple Watch anymore. Or some of them even wear the Apple Watch on one hand and wear a beautiful Breitling on the other hand, which always makes me laugh.
Mm.
So there's certainly a new, young, up-and-coming market who, you know, who loves and appreciates these things.
So intriguing.
as inaccurate as they are. Because your cell phone tells the time perfectly accurate, but whereas a great watch will still lose a few minutes every month or two.
Sounds like a whole nother conversation we have to have there, especially around the skills and the art and the craftsmanship, right, of luxury watches. Yeah. My goodness. Peter, keep doing the amazing job you're doing. We will certainly touch base with you in future to learn more about this space.
Please do, anytime you want.
Thank you, and thank you for being so liberal with your time.
Thank you very much. Thanks, bye.
That's Peter Machlup, South Africa's leading supplier of new and pre-owned luxury watches. If you visit his website, you'll see a wide array of watches that he's essentially trades. And as you've heard, mentioning that there's a very growing market, still very resilient. Prices have come down. So maybe if you have, 35,000, 45,000 rand to spare? Boys and their toys, as he's described, because majority of purchases in the luxury watch space are typically from men, 80 to 90%. Jeez. You brothers have money. Sinenjabulo. Hey, Mudibedi. I have no words. Ospimelo, but we'll come back to it.
If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.